Welcome to Nerds Amalgamated, a podcast that covers the latest events in science, pop culture, and gaming.
I'm the professor, aspiring game developer, sci-fi aficionado, and completely and undeniably a geek trying to take over the world. I'll be breaking down news from tech to gaming.
I am the DJ, a humble nerd, a big weeb, and a watcher from the halls of the multiverse. Just kidding. Anyways, I'll be breaking down all things comics to movies to anime.
Join us and stay hydrated as we quench you with witty banter, unintentionally hilarious hot takes, and trivia more fun than a night at the pub, courtesy of Nerds Amalgamated. Welcome back to Nerds Amalgamated. We've got BPM joining us again this week.
Hey,
and our topics for this week are the Crow reboot that shouldn't be happening, Elon Musk's Neuralink actually working, and Confessions of a Pokemon Lawyer.
All sound very riveting topics.
Uh-huh.
Especially the Crow one.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen the original?
Yes, I am a huge fan of the original. I've read the graphic novels, I've watched the movie, and I've watched the other movies that came after it as well.
Wait, there were other movies that came after that?
Yes. There are three or four plus a TV series.
Wow,
they were really milking that.
Yeah, they were, but nothing beats the original. But some of them had their ups and downs. I am a goth at heart, so of course I watch stuff like that.
Yeah, I've never seen it. The only thing I know about it is that it's about a guy who comes back from the dead to hunt killers or something.
More or less, it's a revenge story about a rock star coming back to life to seek revenge upon his death and the death of his fiance.
And I know that Brandon Lee died during filming because of a mistake with the prop gun.
Yes, and everyone knows which scene it was. Well, anyone who's a cult follower like me knows which scene that was.
Yeah.
But there is debate.
Okay, so... When that happened, when that happened, people, Hollywood decided, okay, we're gonna do a remake of this. And when you heard that, what was your reaction?
Me?
Yeah.
I was like, no, it shouldn't. Because again, just the whole death of one of the greatest actors in the world, though I might be biased. But also on the other hand, if it's not the story of the same character from the original, and it's a different thing, it could work.
Curious to ask about it. So is it the movie first, then the graphic novel, or is it the graphic novel first, then the movie? Graphic novel first. Okay.
Yeah, the movie came from the novel, and you can see that in the way the filmography does it. It sticks very close to the graphic novel because it used lots of dark colors, like dark blues, blacks, reds, and so forth. If I can remember correctly, it's been a while since I read it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were not happy with the whole when the trailer dropped and everything.
Yeah, and I'm also like, as the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by a cover. And Bill Skarsgård as the pro tag. I could see it working. He did a good job at Pennywise.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
He was also the Baron in the latest Dune movies.
I haven't seen the latest Dune. I've only seen the first Dune movie. I need to see the second one.
Yeah, so do I. Well.
Which, you'd think it's, if I had a dollar for every time I've seen Bill Skarsgård in a fat suit, I'd have $2.
He's like Hollywood's new hottest property at this point. Like, I bet you bottom to dollar for dollar, I bet you that Marvel will call him up and say, hey, Bill, star in our newest Marvel movie. I don't care. Just be in the new Marvel movie.
Well, hopefully Bill Spanoff will say no.
Well, anyways, so as soon as the trailer came out, the original Crow director says, No, this film should remain untouched out of respect for Brandon Lee. It's his legacy, and that's how it should remain.
Yeah, I can see why, because, like, yeah, it's a huge, it was a huge thing back in Hollywood.
Yeah, and the director also said this was on his personal Facebook account. So he said, "I don't really get any joy from seeing negativity from any fellow filmmaker's work, and I'm certain the cast and crew really had all good intentions, as we all do on any film. So it pains me to say any more on this topic, but I think the fans' response speaks volumes."
I do have to correct myself, actually. It was Stellan Skarsgård, who I've seen in a fat suit twice.
Ah. Fair enough. And I agree with you, though, BPM, that it is that it feels like a making a movie after Brandon Lee's epic remaking a movie after Brandon Lee's performance. That just rubs the wrong way.
Oh yeah, but as I said, like, if it's not like the story of Eric Draven and a different Crow, like the other movies after the original Crow had the same lore about coming back to life following a Crow, yada yada yada, vengeance. But they're all different stories. Well, not all top tier like the original one, but there's some good others.
Well,
terrible.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, BPM, because apparently a YouTuber shared a new plot and story details after an anonymous source posted him information about the test screening of the film, and this is what it says: it's a very different interpretation of James O'Barr's graphic novel. Interestingly, it's only the basic premise and a few characters carried over into this new story, which I think is going to be annoying a few people. He went on to detail that his source said that the film is one of the better ones in the franchise, but it does lack energy and style of the 1994 original. He continues, "So the movie itself is very, very slow in pace, with a tone reminiscent of a gritty neo-noir thrillers like Drive and That Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, rather than the very gothic, rain-swept fantasy film of Tim Burton's Batman." Next, he provided details on Skarsgård's Eric Draven being depicted. "So the very best thing about this movie is the incredible and committed performance by Bill Skarsgård. Cause that he's the lead, which is sporting a cropped mullet, interesting, and full body tattoos."
Oh no. They've gone for the Suicide Squad Joker.
No, God, just no. And why Eric Draven? Don't do Eric Draven. That's going to piss so many people off, including me.
So moving to the plot, so the film opens with our protagonist Eric Draven fighting to get clean in a rehab facility. It's here that he meets Shelley, a beautiful new resident with her own dark past. So they're both residents, both addicts. The two quickly become infatuated with each other and eventually break out of the facility together, running off into a nameless city ready to take the world head on. So it's building that love story. The first act of the movie focuses on the budding romance. They live fast, they play hard, enjoying recreational drugs, making love, and professing their newfound affection for each other, he continued. However, not soon after we're introduced to the film's antagonist, a powerful business magnate known as Mr. Rogue, who's played by Danny Houston, this individual has connections to Shelley's past. Rogue is imbued with supernatural abilities, interesting, that allowed him to trade innocent souls in exchange for an extended lifespan here on Earth. Wait, did that happen in the original movie? Or no, am I missing something?
No, the original was Eric Draven dies.
Yeah.
He comes back as a vengeful spirit, takes down the bad guys in the most entertaining ways, I find.
Yeah, I saw.
And possibly psychotic ways as well, because I'm like, wow. And then he returns to the land of the dead, because dead aren't supposed to stay within the realm of the living.
So continue on. When Shelley bears witness to a sinister agenda, he sends his thugs to find and eliminate her and anyone else who could compromise his position of power. So this leads to the inevitable confrontation where Shelley and Eric are discovered, then brutally executed by the henchmen. So Eric wakes up in a dream world, a limbo, in a world where between worlds. Oh God, not the multiverse again! Guarded by the army of crows and guided by a mysterious vagabond man who seems to be representative of the afterlife. Of course, there's always that guy. The Guardian sets out to Eric on his path to putting the wrong things right by means of vengeance. In order to rescue Shelley's soul from hell, he returns to the world living, unable to be killed, but lacking the skills to fight. One of the more interesting aspects of this movie versus the previous films is Eric doesn't suddenly have the confidence and physical prowess to take this revenge easily. This one, it's very messy. He suffers very brutal physical attacks along the way. His healing abilities are much slower, and he definitely feels pain with every attack.
Yeah, well, he did feel pain in the original, but just like his, from what I can remember in the graphic, can't remember exactly the graphic novel's powers, but in the movie, it was high agility, high regenerative ability, and since it was Brandon Lee, who was the son of
Bruce Lee,
he knows how to fight.
Oh yeah. Also, interestingly, he doesn't have a crow as his constant companion, he elaborated. There are multiple birds seen throughout the movie in the background, but they don't necessarily guide him in his mission. He has to figure out how to track down his killer.
Crow is the whole key thing. Like, it's like his link to the land of the living as his ghost self.
If so, you're not going to have the crow, you might as well just remake Ghost of Patrick Swayze.
Can you imagine
they need the crow. Fucking the whole movie's called The Crow for a reason.
Can you imagine for the crow? Imagine like the actor follows a canary instead. Like, hey, wait a minute! It's like the canary comes out. Like, oh, I can track you down to your killers. Follow me. goes on the wild goose chase.
No, that's just stupid. Because like there was one of the thickest lines that in the original one, and he says to one of his victims, "What do you call a group of crows?" They said, "I don't know," and he just smiles and says, "The murder," and then hangs up the phone. I'm like, that's just fucking epic.
In terms of character design, for the majority of the film, Eric doesn't have the traditional look of the crow either. He doesn't look full transform into the undead Avenger until the final act. Oh, that sucks!
It's got to piss so many people off. It's already pissing me off.
What else? The film is extremely violent, though. There is a lack of personality from the villains. They are mostly interchangeable thugs, and it robs the chaos of any emotional impact. So they're mostly just meat for the grinder, cannon fodder.
Well, they're pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Have a bit of personality. Actually, one of them was a very interesting character. So they were all pretty unique characters, so hopefully they still have some of that in it. I've still got to see it, but so what I'm hearing, I'm not going to be very happy about it.
There's very little action with one memorable set piece, Bloody Showdown at the Opera House, Visceral Thrill. So again, it's very slow paced, interspersed with very little action. And then presumably that third act showdown. Skarsgård is the standout. He's not an action hero. He's vulnerable. He's emotional. There's a real sense of trauma from him, even fear that we see in Eric when he realizes what's happening to him. And the conclusion from the sources, so the movie overall isn't bad, it just doesn't have the same emotional impact as the 1994 film and doesn't see it becoming as iconic, but it does give credit daring to be bold and different instead of being a lazy copy of the original. They swing from the fences here and mostly works aside from a slow pace, not as much as action as you like, but apparently it's all pretty basic, much land for the most part. I don't know what to say.
It's just, I don't know. Like, I agree with what he said there. It's not going to be as popular as the original film or the graphic novel, because the whole thing that drew people to it was the anti-hero gothic fantasy type scenario.
Oh, by the way, if for anyone curious with the Crow trailer, I'm just looking at the trailer right now. Likes to dislikes wise, 116,000 dislikes to 75,000 likes.
Sounds about right.
What I don't understand is, like, why these changes are, like, why are these changes necessary? Like, I get it, like, they want to modernize this movie for the modern audiences, but I don't think these changes need to be necessary to get the modern audience into it.
No, like, as I said, like, if it's like an entirely different Krull story, it will do well. But they're using the name Eric Draven, and then it's just got to get a lot of negs.
And plus,
it's going to be a box office hit.
It ain't going to be a box office hit. And not to mention, like, you're disrespecting the guy who made the movie, popular. As I said, I don't know what to say. Like, I've seen The Crow a long time ago, and I liked it then. But this version, I've seen the trailer, and it just felt like it was like they were trying to copy John Wick as well, with the whole guns and the whole, this is a weapon, I can use it and kill people with it in the most violent way possible.
Yeah, see, he did in the original, it was more of it was up close and personal.
Yeah.
He used to use, like, knives and stuff. And then he used knives, and he blew up somebody in the car by strapping him into the car with dynamite and just let it loose into the lake.
So I'm assuming you just wait for the DVD to come out, or are you gonna?
No, I will probably find the cheapest cinema and see it there.
oh, that's painful. How about you, Professor?
I am a Crow fan. I'll still watch it, but yeah. I don't know.
How about you, Professor? You gonna watch it, or are you gonna go, it's not for me?
Yeah. I don't watch a whole lot of movies these days, so probably not for me.
That's fair enough. Fair enough.
It would have to be something really special for me to go and watch it, especially in cinemas.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, complete different tangent, but cinemas are just so expensive these days for what you get.
Oh, don't get me started. Oh, the drinks are so expensive. Why? Why does it cost like $3.50 for a can of, for a bottle of Coke? Why?
That's why you bring your own in.
Although, tell me out here. Do cinemas allow people to bring their own in, or is it just a American thing? Like, they don't allow?
No, not in Australia, but I do it anyway.
They don't like it, but they can't really stop you.
Yeah, you just stick it in your pants and walk on in.
Yep. Ticket prices are expensive over there as well. How much is it now for a movie to watch a movie?
I mean, I should know this because I went to see Dune a couple of weeks ago, but I didn't actually pay for the tickets, so I don't know.
Oh, you lucky boy!
Well, there's always Google.
There's always Google. Yeah, that's fair.
Cinema costs $19 for an adult for general admission.
But back to the director, the original director of The Crow. So he's also added a couple of remarks about the remaking of The Crow. By the way, that Facebook post, that wasn't his first time. He said it on 2020 about doing it, and it says he rejected the idea on the grounds that Brandon Lee made the movie. He made that movie. He made that character. The character was not taken from a comic book. That was Brandon, he argued. And Brandon Lee died making that movie. He paid the worst price anyone could ever pay making a movie, and it's his legacy. The guy would have been a huge star after that movie. He wasn't able to do that. So that's what that movie is, the original director affirmed. It's not just a movie that could be remade. It's one man's legacy, and it should be treated with that level of respect.
I can agree with that. Like, as I said, Eric Draven and Brandon Lee were one and the same. As I said, Brandon Lee is one of my favorite actors. I've seen him in other films, and he's like other smaller films, like indie films he did.
Yeah.
And they're pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, and he even responded to Skarsgård's take on Draven. And this was his simple response. Eric Draven's having a bad day. Next reboot, thanks.
Wow. Yeah. When, yeah.
Like... when you have a director on the four, the old director who say that, oh, there goes any goodwill for the new movie.
Yeah. I'm just hoping that, because it's already being made, it's already got to be produced, it's already got to be sent to the cinemas, can't be stopped now. I just hope, like, Skarsgård himself takes what the director says and says, fuck what the actual director says, I'm doing what I want.
It's hard, though. Like, see, Skarsgård's on a very, very difficult position. Like, I would say, like with June as well, like, I bet you some of the actors would also be in that same thing. Like, okay, I need to try and be like the character in the book or in the original source material, but I have to also try and obey the wishes of the director who wants to make it modernized.
Yeah, like the whole emo trend, which I think they're going with. Like, no, you're going dark. Go dark. Go goth.
Like, you get that as well, don't you, Professor? You got what I mean?
I was listening. What were you saying?
I was saying about the whole, so if you're, like, for June, for example, okay? If you're an actor, it's very difficult to go, okay, I want to pay homage to the original character of the source material, but at the same time, I have to obey the whims of the director who wants to modernize it at the same time.
Yeah. There's also, I think this is particularly emotionally charged because Brandon Lee died filming it.
Yeah.
If he hadn't died, it would probably, like, be a popular movie and get good reviews, but not have the same emotional connection.
Yeah.
Well, that can all go depending on the writing of the film myself. I think, even if Brandon Lee didn't die, and they rewrite it to suit it more to the modern era, it could, the right, like, today's writing compared to way back then, the writing isn't that good.
Nah, it's never that good.
You get a few gold mines there, but that most of the time it's sort of either crappy or not so crappy, you know?
I wonder how much of that is the phenomenon that you don't remember the crappy movies from the 90s.
I never watched any of the creepy movies in the 90s.
They're good in a sense of there's some entertainment value compared to the crappy movies now. Now it's just, oh, what the hell, man?
Well, not every movie can be June Part 2.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Especially Marvel movies.
Marvel movies are just Marvel movies.
Okay, ever since Endgame, I don't think we've ever seen anything as gloriously epic as that, like in a Marvel project. We haven't seen anything as epic as that.
Yeah, like they should have, like, in my opinion, after, once they finished Endgame, Marvel should have said, nah, that's all we're doing.
But they can't, they couldn't, because look at the money, like, it was insane.
So what you're saying is that money corrupts art?
Yes, you are, yes, I am saying that.
But without money, art can't be created.
Yeah. So there's the dilemma. Yeah, that's the catch-22.
That's why we need to move on to the future.
Yep.
With post-scarcity economy.
And brain chips.
Yep, and brain chips.
Hey!
Thank you for finishing that segue for me.
No problems.
I'm sure you've heard about Elon Musk's Neuralink company, who are making brain computer interfaces.
I vaguely heard about it. Vaguely. Until now.
Yeah, well, a few months ago, they got permission to implant in humans. And at that point, I started to get a bit scared about it because the reports came out about the monkeys. Apparently, their test monkeys died in horrible ways after getting the implant.
Did they specify, like, what was the, what were the causes? Like, aside from the obvious ones?
Well, we've got an article in the show notes here about that. They had several failed tests that resulted in increasing the number of animals they had to use. The company has killed 1,500 animals, including more than 280 sheep, pigs, and monkeys since 2018.
Damn!
Wow.
That feels like a lot of animals. Like, I'm not a brain surgeon, obviously, but I do wonder whether this number is exaggerated, because, of course, they terminate the... When they terminate the experiment, they euthanize the animal.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that's exaggerated at all. But no. There were a lot of internal employees who were trying to whistleblow on that.
Oh, yeah? It could be a mix of both over-exaggeration with a tad of truth, because it is new tech, so to speak, and it's like very sort of near the tier of sci-fi.
Yeah. So they had several monkeys where they used an incorrect surgical glue, which led to the monkeys suffering. Here we go. I found the article.
Yeah.
That I was thinking of. We'll put that in the show notes. It's an article from Wired.
Wired.
So Elon Musk claims that none of the monkeys died as a result of an implant, and that researchers had chosen monkeys who are already close to death.
Oh, that could be a lie.
Yeah, it's Elon Musk, who is well known for exaggerating.
Yeah.
Come on. This is the language of business people. They love exaggeration.
Exaggerating so much you get sued for stock manipulation.
Yeah.
Most business people manage to avoid that one.
They should really not try that in the first place.
So I'm not going to go into too many details, because it could be a bit confronting.
Yep.
Lead
to a lawsuit.
The details on the monkeys are that they had the implants and then received infections, botched implants, botched surgery. Seems like some sort of PTSD type condition. Complete failure of the surgery, such that the screws they were using weren't torqued down correctly and could be lifted out. But the good news is the first human patient has received his Neuralink, has recovered, and is using it to live stream himself playing chess.
Oh, very Professor Xavier of him.
My favorite line of the article, though, is that he says, Ed, that he had given up on being able to play Civilization, got his implant, and when he had recovered and learned how to use it, sat down and played for 8 hours straight.
Wow. It's like, God, but overall, like, it's animal testing. There's always got to be crap about it. It's not a good thing.
Yeah, so I really hope his implant's working well.
Yeah.
Although I do wonder what is new about the Neuralink implant compared to existing implants, because I remember seeing a computer control implant, would have been the early 2000s, so about 20 years ago now, I saw one on TV that seemed to do the exact same things that this current generation Neuralink product does.
Was there side effects?
I don't know. It was only a short segment, and I haven't been able to find the name. I tried looking it up earlier. I wasn't able to find the name of the patient. But he was able to use a device connected to his brain to control the cursor on a computer, which seems very similar to what the Neuralink chip can do.
No, you'll just have to, I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
See, what's going to be interesting about this is the fact that now Elon Musk has cracked it. Are we going to see other versions of it in the near future? Like, can you imagine Jeff Bezos doing his version or Mark Zuckerberg doing his version?
Oh, please no.
It could happen, man. It could happen.
Elon's bad enough. I don't want Bezos and Zuckerberg in on this.
if you want to go even worse about this, can you imagine a government-sponsored version of Neuralink?
That's not something I feel like I'd trust. It feels very 1984, depending on the capabilities of it, of course.
Yeah.
If it was just this sort of thing, like control a computer with your thoughts, I think I'd go for it. But if it was what Elon Musk wants it to be, which is being able to like play music and stuff directly into your brain,
Well, what else could they put in their brain? Propaganda?
Yeah, I think I would not want to go for it.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. I now just realized. Imagine Apple monetizing this technology. Oh, fuck.
Hey, at least with Apple, you'd spend a few billion dollars on it, but you wouldn't get as many ads.
Yeah, can you imagine Tim Cook on the nearest on the next Apple press conference introducing, ladies and gentlemen, the iLink or some crappy name that they'll think of.
And they'll claim they invented it. It'll be way overpriced for what it is.
I mean, what was their most recent one? The iPro?
The Vision Pro.
Yeah, the Vision Pro and how...
Which is an incremental upgrade on current VR systems.
And Mark Zuckerberg made a video about it, and he ripped that one to shreds, apparently, saying how the his version is better, apparently.
Well, he can't play games on the Vision Pro, so yeah, sorry, hey, Tim Cook.
But it will also there will have to be ethical questions along with this with this level of technology putting into a patient, like the whole transhumanism argument, and then you also have to ask the questions like, will this violate the doctor's Hippocratic oath in terms of doing no harm when this device could potentially harm a patient if not done right?
Well, that's true of any surgery. Like, you could get a hip replacement and it could go wrong. You can go to the dentist and it can go wrong. So I don't think it's fair to say that this is a particularly dangerous surgery compared to any other kind of brain surgery, if you're the kind of person who will benefit from it, like the subject in the article who is paralyzed from the shoulders down. If you're a full able-bodied person, I think then it might start crossing the floor into unethical at this stage.
Yeah.
Because brain surgery is not something you want to be undertaking lightly. On the other hand, I am full into transhumanism. The sooner I can get rid of this shitty meat suit, the better.
Want to go like a cyborg body? Ghost in the Shell mode?
Yep. Oh, shit.
I want to be a robot.
I'm having this mental image right now of the professor being like Bender. Just goes like, bite my shiny fat metal ass. within a Cobra hat as well.
Yeah. Or you just, you know, just go full on to AI mode, like that horror movie Devil Sea or something with Johnny Depp in it.
Oh, boy. Oh, that's a... Yeah.
I haven't seen that one. How's it go?
More or less, mad scientist type has a bad, like a incurable disease or cancer or something. And he decides to transfer his entire personality and intelligence into a computer, and then things get fucked.
You mean the Ninth Gate?
Something like that. I can't remember the name of the film, but it's okay. Like that. It's more or less the guy goes mad and sort of starts weird shit.
Oh, I think I know which one you're talking about. It's Transference. That's the one.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Transference. That movie was a messed up movie. Transference. Find it. But with the I'm happy that we might see the Neuralink being shown to the world what it can do. I want to see it happening on the not Transference, Transcendence. That's the name. I want to see how it fares 5 years or 10 years or 20 years down the line.
Well, funny you should say that, because that's my second big concern with medical implants. If the company stops supporting them, you're screwed.
Oh, yeah.
There is legitimately people out there with robot eyes who can't use them because the company went bankrupt.
Oh, shit.
And there's also, you go back to the low tech, your iron heart ticker, whatever it's called.
The pacemakers.
Yeah, the pacemakers. If there's been situations with pacemakers where they stop working or they're put in and they don't work.
Yeah, though a pacemaker is comparatively a very simple device.
Mm.
So it's easier, it's not easy to replace, if you need a pacemaker, you need a pacemaker.
Yeah.
But there are more companies making pacemakers. In this case, I was wrong about them going bankrupt. The company just decided to stop supporting it.
Oh, shit.
That makes no sense.
Can you imagine, like, can you imagine when you have that bionic eyes, and then years later down the track, you're driving down the road, and your eyes decide to go, oh, sorry, man, we've stopped supporting this device. Your device will be shutting down in 3, 2, 1, you go blind all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Hopefully by that point, we've got self-driving cars.
But that'd be terrifying. Like, imagine just doing your daily activity, and all of a sudden you'll go blind.
Yeah, I can't imagine how crushing it must be to have your vision returned and then lose it again because of a company like this.
Now, can you imagine that on the scale of Neuralink? Can you imagine, like, just doing playing chess, and all of a sudden, oh, nope, there goes it. There it goes. I can't move anything. Nope. Down I go.
Yeah. Although, if Neuralink gets to the sci-fi point that Elon Musk wants it to, where it can do things like be Google in your head and have music playing and stuff, then that would be less disruptive. Why did I have to say Google? Now my phone's going off.
It's also extremely dangerous because if it gets to that point, they get like Wi-Fi access directly to their brain.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah.
Have a goddamn field day.
I haven't thought about the hackers, but yes, you can hack pacemakers and insulin pumps. There must be a way to hack Neuralink.
Can you imagine your Neuralink going, this Neuralink is now sponsored by NordVPN.
But that level would not be till like way in the future when I'm sure we're all gonna be dead.
Yep. Yep.
We will.
Yeah, we will. It would not be that long. Yep.
No. Assuming they survive the water wars.
Yep.
Yep.
I mean, this looks promising. This looks very promising. But and you're right, there are a lot of things we have to be afraid of, like the support systems and the if people will hack into it. God, that would be painful. The other interesting thing with this would be, can you imagine companies going like, okay, we're gonna rely on Neuralink workers to do all the this type of jobs. The ones who don't have Neuralink workers will do this type of job.
You think it would lead to a class divide?
Actually, yeah, yeah.
I could see that. I thought you were going another way. Actually, there's a short story called Mana, MANNA, which is about an AI which micromanages people and the impact that has on society. But the idea is that it micromanages people, makes them so efficient that then no one needs to work anymore except for the handful of people. And then the author wrote a second story or a second part, which is about the after effects and what society could look like as a post-scarcity economy.
Is that by Marshall Brain, by any chance?
Yes, it is.
I like the surname Marshall Brain.
Yes, a bit of nominative determinism going on there.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's in the rock, like, we're looking at in the right hands. Imagine the wrong hands. Like, can you imagine criminals using Neuralink just to like? It'd be like Watch Dogs, essentially, where you could use your Neuralink just to like break into the ATMs or have a Neuralink just break into your car.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see it, but I could see a class divide where people who have implants have access to high-tech cars and stuff. Mm. And it's just assumed that everyone has an implant, even if they don't.
Mm.
So the people who don't have implants, for whatever reason, get pushed out to the edges of society.
Yeah, go back then, to the class system.
And the class divide is going to get even more narrowed down when you have the ones where you go like, okay, I have the version 1.0. Okay, and you only have version 0.5, for example. And there'd be like these little divides, you know?
Maybe. But then again, that's like deep, far future, if Earth still exists at that time.
Yeah. Yep.
But shouldn't be. But that whole ideology of the divide still exists today in certain. We'll see.
And I'll say one more thing before I leave it to the professor. The other interesting question is going to be: are we going to see this put onto the kids when they grow up? Like, are you going to put them on Neuralink at birth and then see how they go, or is it just going to be just for the medical patients?
I imagine like this first generation is going to be only for people who need it, but the future sci-fi version, I imagine they'd have to wait until you finish growing. But yeah, that's an interesting question about whether kids would get bullied for having Neuralink or not having Neuralink.
Oh.
Kids are vicious and will bully each other over anything.
Even worse would be like Neuralink versus Neuralink. Can you imagine social media around that time? It would just be like, you're out, where? You're out again. Oh, that'd be terrible.
But then you also look, if it does go into that generation when it gets put into everyone, so to speak, you have the idea of like what side effects it has when it's turned into a baby because they aren't fully developed and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Anyway, we should move it along.
Yep.
The next topic for this week, we have a Pokemon lawyer talking about cease and desist orders.
I'm guessing they don't want Grimbolt and his Gatling gun bopping into them.
Oh.
I've missed that reference. Who is that?
That's Palworld.
Of course. So this is an interview between Luke Plunkett of Aftermath.site and Don McGowan, who was a general counsel for Bungie and the Pokemon Company.
Okay.
So he says he spent a lot of time working on overseeing customer service and traveling because Pokemon Go brought the brand back to international juggernaut status.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to talk to a lot of different privacy regulators.
Yeah. I remember they had issues when like people were playing Pokemon Go and they walked into the Roma Street police station looking for a Pokemon.
Who
could forget the ones where some Pokemon Go players just walked into a funeral? An actual funeral was going on at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah, some people were just oblivious.
Or using it whilst they're driving, which is a terrible idea.
We can talk about the horror stories of Pokemon Go till the cows come home.
Yeah, so the interview is only short, but my favorite part of it is the final question, where Luke asks, how does the Pokemon Company handle cease and desist letters with regards to fan projects? How did you find them, and where did you draw the line on what's allowed and what the company thinks needs to be shut down? And Don says, it's thanks to you folks, because he'd be sitting in his office minding his own business when someone would send him a link to a news article. And that's how he'd find out about the fan projects. And he now teaches at the University of Washington and says the worst thing on earth is when your fan project gets press, because now he knows about you.
Wow.
So
then
in other
he says
words,
that you don't send a takedown right away and you wait to see if they get funded on Kickstarter or similar.
Oh, shit.
Because no one likes suing fans, but the main goal is to prevent people making money off the IP, it seems.
And then you have to look into the good old fucked up stuff of Rule 34. If it exists, there's porn of it.
Oh, don't remind them of that.
Yeah, I imagine so there's a few lawsuits about that.
Oh, there, I'm sure.
Especially a company like Disney or Pixar.
I'd hate to be the intern of that law firm, constantly all these R34 artworks and going, what am I doing? Why am I subjected to doing this?
Because some of that stuff is quite fucked. I'll say it that way. And not the fun way.
Yeah, well, I thought this was really interesting, especially in the context of the last few weeks where we've been talking about Yuzu.
Yeah.
Because the point that I made then was that if you don't want to get sued and taken down, there's two things you need to do. Not make money off it and not announce it to the world until it's ready.
Yep.
Once it's ready, you can announce it and release it onto the internet and then let everyone get it. But if you announce a project and you say, I'm making a fan-made Pokemon game, they will shut you down before you can blink.
Yep.
Oh, Professor, I was going
to
tell you something.
So it's nice to have them actually admit that and that that's how they work.
Oh, Professor, I was going to tell you something. Speaking of Yuzu, I don't know whether you've also saw the news. Their other one, Suyu, has been shut down.
I'm not surprised. Since it's a fork of the existing emulator and follows the same system, I can see why they would have taken it down. I think any future Switch emulators are going to have to be a clean sheet project.
And not be announced on the internet until later down the track. So, okay, so does that mean, so with what he said, so does that mean they can never, or any fan projects they do, it has to be not-for-profit, essentially?
Yeah, that seems to be the best way to not get sued for making a fan project.
Yeah, but that sucks though. Like, what if say for example, like BPM over here, he makes a fan project of Pokemon and it gets wildly successful to the point where people have gone come up to him and go, "Hey BPM, your game is very your Pokemon fan project is very successful, and I would like to fund it." Like, what's gonna happen then?
Sorry, who's coming up and saying that they want to fund it?
Let's say a company. Let's say XYZ. Comes up to BPM and says, "Hey, BPM, your Pokemon fan project is wildly successful. And I see a lot of people loving it, and I want to fund your game."
I doubt that would ever happen because of the legal issues. I think they'd be more likely to hire the developers and then make a knockoff.
Ooh.
Or I could just sell it to them and say, "You deal with the lawsuit."
But that line, I like how he said, "Like, I teach entertainment law, and the worst thing on earth is when your fan project gets pressed because now I know about you." That's a very creepy afterthought. That's like that last line you get in an argument, like, "I know where you live."
Yep, it's like they're always watching you.
Uh-huh.
Well, they're like, the internet is just open to everyone anyway. Mm. So,
but is it okay? That being said, though. The one thing I don't understand is, I thought it's a good thing to get a fan project to get the press. So wouldn't that, so by that effect, if your fan project gets successful, people might go to the to the original source and go, "Hey, I want to try out that let's say for example, Pokemon fan project. Okay, it gets successful. They can go, "Okay, you made me get more interested in playing Pokemon."
Yeah, well, the big companies don't see it that way.
Oh.
They just want to protect their IP.
They could always, you know, hire the person that's developing it.
I mean, there was a Resident Evil game that came out. It was a fan project, and then one of the developers shut that down with a DMC. And then, as a response, they hired the guy that made the that game, that fan project. I don't know if it was Resident Evil or Silent Hill.
Probably sounds more like Silent Hill because there's a lot of think Silent Hill. Has a bit more following than Resident. I could be wrong on that, though.
I feel like it's the other way around because Resident Evil is still making games and Silent Hill hasn't had a release in how long?
A while. I think the last one was 3? No.
Okay, I'm looking at it right now. It's not any of those games. It was PT.
Ah.
It was a Konami game. It was a Konami game, and they hired the guy that made the Konami fan project in the end.
Okay, well, that's still an edge case. Most companies don't see it that way.
Yeah. Well, the same with, like, you look into, like, there's been a similar situation with Warhammer. Warhammer, especially Warhammer 40K, there's an artist on YouTube. He's still got his stuff on there now. And his stuff, his 3D animation was, like, on point. Was really, 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 really finalized and really, really good. Like, 10 out of 10 work ethic on this dude. And Warhammer goes and calls up and says, hey, we're hiring you. And now it works for Warhammer TV, and he's making millions.
So it begs the question, like, so with that, with all the revelations that came out from this interview, does it make you love the brand more or hate the brand more?
Well, I never played Pokemon, so I can't say a thing.
It doesn't really change how I feel about it. So let's keep it moving on. DJ, what's messed up about anime this week?
So, in our messed up moments in nerddom number 8. Here we are. Okay, before I continue on this one, you ever heard of Junji Ito?
Yes, the only one I've read is The Enigma of Amaguri Fault.
Okay. I know him well.
So I've got one here. It's called Spiraling Obsession, Uzumaki. This was published between 1998 to 1999 in Japan as part of a weekly magazine series. Uzumaki is arguably Ito's most bizarre and twisted work to date, since it's been adapted into video games, a live-action film, and is about to get a new anime series. And the story is, it takes part in a small coastal Japanese town that's plagued by a curse that manifests itself as a spiral. The collection is an anthology of sorts that details the ensuing events as the curse takes hold. From a girl whose face becomes spiral, bodies entangling together, turns into snail monsters and blood-sucking pregnant women. This entire list could have been based on this entire series. There's no better introduction to Uzumaki than the first chapter, which centers around the protagonist Kiri's father as he develops an unhealthy obsession with spirals. This fascination is innocent at the beginning, such as collecting items with spiral patterns, but as the obsession grows, he begins altering his body to become a spiral himself. And the messed up part was the perseverance at the end, where he was discovered by his family in a wooden tub. He succeeded in mutilating his body into a spiral, stretching and crushing himself into an almost unrecognizable mass of flesh. Talk about a hobby.
Love it. Like the Japanese horror is the best horror. Hollywood should take notes.
Oh yeah. I'll agree on that one.
And don't do remakes like they did with the other ones, like The Ring and The Grudge. Stick to the Japanese.
Speaking of Hollywood horror, though, I did see a trailer for a new Alien movie.
Oh shit!
Called Alien Romulus, and I can't imagine it's going to be any good. If it's anything like Covenant.
Okay. I have a bit of a gripe on this one. What is it with alien movies and putting religious / significant names? Where we had Covenant and what was the other alien movie that came out with after
Prometheus?
Covenant? Yeah, that's the one. That was Romulus. What's next? Oh, Alien Zeus. Okay, what's this one? Oh, there's a guy who did Zeus. And
well, Romulus isn't a religious name. It's the name of the founder of Rome.
Yeah, it's a significant name.
Well, you look at that. They had one of the older films was Alien Resurrection. So,
but yeah, I agree. I've seen some of the stuff from the previous movies, and yeah, the story it's getting more and more messy.
Yeah, it's a shame because they had something good there. They just couldn't do it. But the first two Alien movies are absolute classics.
Yep.
Well, on to our shout-outs. On the 18th of March, James M. Ward passed away.
Unfortunately.
James was an American tabletop game designer and fantasy author who worked for TSR for more than 20 years, most notably on Dungeons & Dragons. He wrote the guidebooks Deities and Demigods and novels Pool of Radiance. He was one of the players in Gary Gygax's early games while developing D&D. He has a character named after him, Drawmidge, which is just Jim Ward spelled backwards.
I I've never read the novels, and I had a look in the guidebooks of Deities and Demigods. Actually, a pretty good book.
Yeah, so Deities and Demigods is a first edition rulebook for the original D&D release.
Losing talents left, right, and center, aren't we?
Yep. On the 19th of March, 2024, M. Emmett Walsh passed away. Michael Emmett Walsh was a character actor who appeared in over 200 films and television series, including playing as Captain Bryant in Blade Runner.
Oof.
He said Blade Runner was difficult and tiresome to make because of Ridley Scott's insistence on perfection. He also said he was completely confused and had no idea where anything was going.
That sounds about right. It's a bit of a weird movie, but it's a good movie. Mm-hmm. Another classic.
And on the 20th of March, Vernor Vinge passed away. Vernor Staffan Vinge was an American science fiction author and professor. He taught mathematics and computer science at San Diego State University. He popularized the technological singularity concept and was among the first authors to present a fictional cyberspace. He won the Hugo Award for A Fire Upon the Deep, A Deepness in the Sky, and Rainbow's End, and his novellas Fast Time at Fairmont High and The Cookie Monster, which I'm assuming isn't about the Sesame Street character.
No, no. Or a horrified version of Cookie Monster from Sesame Street.
Oh.
Which actually, I have a drawing of.
Talking about horror and the Cookie Monster has got me thinking, what about when does Sesame Street become public domain?
Oh, yeah. That would be interesting. I'll have to show you the photo at some point.
Oh, shit. I could totally imagine it now. Elmo being... shit. Horror Elmo.
That would work. Well, he got his cousin, the fan fiction creation of Emo, which is Elmo's cousin or something. If I remember the story correctly.
That would be very, very terrifying. So he's got the he got Mimsy, cousin Pepe, Elmo Noske, Elma, Elmo's grandma and grandpa Selmo. Elmo's great-great-great-grandma, Elmo, great-great-grandfather and namesake, Uncle Jack, Uncle Jill, Jesse, Chester, Chester's parents, Fonella, Funchester, Fergus.
Okay,
Fuggs.
Why are you reading Elmo's family tree to us?
Because BPM over here wanted to know which family member was it.
No, I didn't.
All right.
That's just, you're just a fan of it. We understand.
Yep. Yeah. Yes.
Anyway, before we derail again, on the 22nd of March, we had the 40th anniversary of the movie 1984. Released in 1984, based upon George Orwell's 1949 novel, it starred John Hurt, Richard Burton, Susanna Hamilton, and Cyril Cusack. Have you guys ever seen this particular version of it?
No, I haven't, but it sounds like a decent lineup of actors.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a really good adaptation.
Is it okay? Does it is it identical to the source material, or there are some creative liberties?
It's very close to it.
Okay.
Sounds like a movie worth seeing if I can find it.
Funnily enough, the movie shares a few locations with Terry Gilliam's Brazil, which is an excellent parody of 1984 style stories.
Wow. Well, I guess it's great minds think alike type thing going on there, maybe.
And another fun fact about it, they filmed many of the scenes on the day that they occurred in the story. For example, a scene where Winston Smith enters his apartment and writes in his diary, dated April the 4th, was filmed on April the 4th, 1984.
Wow, that's pretty on point.
Uh-huh.
And our wacky movie, on the 21st of March, 1974, we figured since Godzilla is about to come out again, we'd cover Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla.
Wow.
In which an Okinawan prophecy appears to foretell Earth's destruction at the hands of Godzilla, only for the true Godzilla to reveal his doppelganger as a mechanical alien weapon.
The Godzilla mythos is random and fantastic.
Yeah, it gets pretty wacky.
Oh, yeah.
Who could forget Baby Godzilla?
There you go, his classic villains like Mon Mothma and all those names that I can't list off the top of my head.
So the movie's seen as a bit of a historical reference to the US occupying the island Okinawa with military bases.
Yeah.
So Mechagodzilla represents the invading force, the Americans. Godzilla represents Japan.
Yeah.
And King Shisa stands in for Okinawa. Huh. The film proposes cooperation between the two nations standing together against a common adversary.
It feels like that movie's so on the nose.
Well, the older movies always were.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Godzilla's always been a political story. The first one's about the nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
Hiroshima, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they've had, wasn't there a movie of King Kong v. Godzilla at some point?
Oh, yeah. There was King Kong versus Godzilla. You mean the recent one?
I don't know about the recent one. I know of the movie. I never saw it, but I know of it.
Yeah, there was a Godzilla versus Kong movie that came out just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So this was the only Japanese Godzilla movie to be released in Hungary.
Oh, yeah?
Which was met with completely unfavorable reception. Critics called it utterly worthless and one of the worst science fiction movies in history.
Oof, I just didn't understand it.
Well, and also they rewrote the dub where Godzilla dies after his first battle with Mechagodzilla. And then at the end of the film, a completely different Godzilla shows up out of nowhere.
Makes no sense. Godzilla never dies. That's the whole thing.
Imagine being the Hungarian man that you go to Japan. And he's like, oh, I remember this movie. This is a different Godzilla. And the Japanese guy goes, no, that you're wrong. This is the actual This is the same Godzilla from the first scene. You just blow his mind apart.
Yeah, I don't know why they'd make that change.
It could be. I don't know. I actually, I can't really say anything about it. Like, I don't see why they do it either. Like, the whole thing about Godzilla is it's in his name, God. I don't know if this is true or not. I think he's supposed to represent, like, the strength of Japan or something.
I do recall, like, they said Godzilla was supposed to signify, like, Japan's protector or something. Something similar to that.
Mm.
That's all we have for this week. DJ, where can they find us?
They can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and any other audio platforms. We'll be there.
All right. Look after yourself. Stay hydrated, and we'll see you again next week.
Stay happy. Stay nerdy. I am out of here.
See y'all.
Here we go.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.